Welcome to Hard Hat Talks podcast. I'm your host, Chris Griner. My man, Sammy V, the producer to the stars, the Dr. Dre of podcasts, on the wheels of steel back here editing and crushing it as always. Our guest today, special guest, and a good friend of mine, vendor to the stars, sales extraordinaire, Thomas Skeen.
Very kind.
Dude, I could have went on, bro. Great golfer, great human, great dad, husband, pickleball champion, from what I've heard, and I've never played, but I'm about to. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm glad to be here.
Dude, thanks for joining us, bro.
I'm a big fan of podcasts, listening and learning, so hopefully there's some value I can add to you and your crowd.
Oh, man, you're going to bring value, but just I appreciate you taking your time to be with us, man. I really do. Let's start. I want to, tell the people a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? I know where you went to college because I'm a big, big fan.
That's right.
And just kind of your early career.
Yeah. Grew up in Asheboro, right in the middle of North Carolina. Not far, couple miles from here, technically. This is city lines go. Grew up here. Went to college at NC State. Amen. And got in this business, really. I was working at Ace Hardware. I don't know if I ever told you that.
I did not know
that. That was my side job, and they were going to close down. And so my parents were like, well, you either have to have a job. I'd always worked on the golf course, like mowing. And they were like, you either have to have a job or – you can come home. I didn't really want to come home after 2 years of college. So a buddy of mine, he dated the girl in the apartment next to me. He said, hey, I work at United Rentals. Come check us out. So I did, and I didn't know what I was getting into. Next thing I know, I'm in the wash pit wearing a Cintas uniform with Thomas and United Rentals. And basically, yes, sir. Yes, basically sir. Doing the job that nobody else wanted to do. I was the gopher. So I was doing that part-time. So that's kind of my – I'd done some construction stuff for my stepdad, and all residential framed a house and stuff like that, but nothing in this industry. And so I spent 2 years with them while in college, inside sales, and they had a big focus on merchandise and supply, so I had some background with that. Anyway, so it ended up being a total of 8 years. I left for a couple years and came back, and then finished my 6 years there in Greensboro. Left the industry for 4 years, worked in a totally different realm. And then that's kind of my funny how I met. Well, I'd met you when I worked at United Rentals.
Never seen you before. Just like we were just like operators. Yes.
And then Donovan Dotson said, hey, look, so we're trying to sell merchandise. We thought we knew what we were doing. And so he's like, hey, go check out what Chris has got over at M&M. It was like a kid in a candy store. I mean, you had everything. That was the only time I probably ever met you. It was just always, can I rent a Georgia buggy here? Do you have this here? Can I have four sticks of rebar, small stuff.
The art of re-renting. I could do a whole. You don't think about that, but re-renting was a huge part of my business because I would rent equipment from companies that we didn't own. Like I'm talking about, dozers or whatever, and United, boom lifts or whatever. My customers had a relationship with me, had an account with me, and they would just get it from me from you. So it was like that was a good business, man, and it's still to this day. If I don't have it, if I can help somebody out, I'm doing it.
And I think that's a little bit different about this industry is the speed. And that's one thing I always got from the rentals. It's different than other channels we'll talk about. But the speed that it takes is it's not worrying about whose equipment it is.
Right.
And when you've got – I remember when I took a job outside the industry, it was like, hey, can you handle the pressure? I was like, man, if I got a backhoe going down, I know I got four guys standing around a hole, that guy screaming at me.
Yeah.
We've got to find a solution. 2 hours is a lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah, in this business, we are solution providers, and that's what I mean, myself is like, I feel like that's where we've done well. If somebody that can figure it out, a tire blows up, whatever, you got to respond quickly.
Yes.
You're going to do well. I mean, to me, that's what I'm looking for. How are we going to fix it,
And I think that's one thing I've always noticed about what your strength in the business has always been having that capacity to handle that. It's not, hey, we got an order and everybody's pulling their hair out how to get it there. You've always got either a plan B, a truck sitting, you've got something going. But back to the United days. So, yeah, we met probably once, talked on the phone hundreds of times.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I got this job. This has been 10 years next week, actually.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So, I remember applying. I didn't even know if it was the lawn and garden side, construction. I had no idea. I was just like Husqvarna. I was looking to make a change. And thankfully, in the phone interview, I realized it was for the construction side. I was like, well, I know a little something about that. You know, yeah. So that's cool. So, progressed on, got the job. So it was about this time of year, right around Christmas, you know, there's not much going on. So I was going to go see people I knew, some United folks, just say, hey, I'm here. I'm a point of contact. So then I'm like, well, I remember this guy, Chris, at M&N, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's there. I don't know what they do.
Yeah.
And I walked in the door in 2015, in December, and you said, you're my Husqvarna rep. Because I guess I already had a Husqvarna shirt at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how does this guy remember? Like, yeah. Yes, I am. And yeah. So, you know, that was cool. Just, I had no idea you didn't remember who I was, but, and then that was your days at M&N.
And yeah, man.
Moving forward, and then it's been cool to see what you've done and grown here. And
you've been a big supporter of getting us going, man. And, I tell people a lot, vendors, there's a lot of different vendors, but people, how they respond, pricing, support, technical, whatever. It's hard to get any better than my man Thomas, bro. I ain't trying. I'm not because he's here. Because I mean, if you're good, you're good, right? So it's like, I'll tell people that. It's like you respond. I've been around you when you're doing technical and hands on training, and he knows what he's doing, and that means a lot. I think, man, because well, there's a lot of times like I don't know what I'm doing, and to have somebody who does what the product I'm selling to come in and help me sell it and get me through it is super beneficial.
Well, that means a lot. All I can do is ask for your trust, and you've given, you know,
yeah.
we've had a good trust, a good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You've grown, you know, good supporter of our brand, and that's what we need as you as a dealer and that partnership. And if that trust isn't there, you know, there's other dealers, there's other vendors, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's been a good fit, good mix.
Yeah, man. Sam, quick, a quick thing. Me and Thomas both went to NC State. I failed out of college. He graduated, so he's up on that one. We both like golf. I went to NC State, too, and we both worked on the golf course.
Yes.
So I did carts, and then I did I mowed greens
same
and stuff.
Here. Yep. I did the same.
That, so
the cart job was still the best job I've ever had.
Best job. Free golf and just washing down carts, but yes. I'm getting some tips for cleaning clubs.
Yes.
My son did it. It's like a family tradition, bro. I was like, bro, free golf and whatever, you know. But so with that being said, I went to school for turf grass management because my goal in life was to play free golf the rest of my life because I loved it and I sucked at it. And, you know, I was like, well, I'm going to go pro, but it's expensive. So if I can cut the grass and make the courses look beautiful, and then I was playing some of the most beautiful courses for free – being in the business,
yeah.
I worked at Limble Ridge, yeah. You know, and I'm like, these, you know, Don Shula's walking around the course. I'm shaking his hand, then I'm weed eating. And when they all go in because they've played their daily round, the course was wide open. And I'm playing it. I'm playing this, you know, people that own Naples, Florida. I'm playing their course.
Oh, I had the privilege to play there.
Gosh,
we had a golf trip get rained out. So we went up there and play. And I look over at my buddy, I said, you see that right there? That's a 3-story house with copper downspouts. He was like, what does that matter? I was like, it's kind of a big deal. Like,
that's serious.
It's the little things, you know?
It is, yeah. Man. No, that's awesome, though. Yeah, man, what drives you, brother? What, you know, what gets you out of the bed every morning?
I'd say, you know, I always work-wise, you know, you work for to support the family.
Mm-hmm.
Work-wise, you know, outside of, beyond that is – trying to, you know my market and make sure it's growing. You know, mm-hmm. I took this job. My goal was, hey, I don't know how long I'm going to be in this role, but when I step out of it, I want to make sure this I have grown it, improved it, you know, made it healthy. And so sometimes that means saying no to, you know, a quick sale that's not from a dealer standpoint. It's an instant gratification, but it's not good.
Yeah.
You know, down the road, it's going to burn
yeah.
you. So just always being aware, and you know, I've called on North and South Carolina. I'm back to covering just North Carolina now, but every market's a little different. So just knowing who's in the market end user wise,
yeah.
knowing who's in the market dealer wise, and then within that dealer, who wants to sell equipment? Who wants to sell my equipment?
Yeah.
And so being that support, because, you know, you're going to get the guys there for 6 months. He's calling you, you know, so just that, having that awareness, that's what drives to make sure it's a healthier, healthier, territory, I guess. Yeah.
And what I respect about, you and your company is y'all don't just set up every, if a guy's got a taco stand here and a sign that says rental equipment, you know what I mean? I mean, they don't just set everybody up, and I appreciate, and as a vendor, we appreciate that, and because you're getting the support. I mean, we're investing money in the products and you're supporting us, and you're not setting everybody up, which I think, you know, there's some that will, you know what I mean? And I think that means a lot when you're pushing a product that, you know, I have access to, I'm supporting, I'm stocking.
Right.
It's kind of unfair that this guy who doesn't stock is going to get the same price or whatever. And then it's just, I don't know. I like how you guys do it. And not everybody's like that, man. I mean, I really think that means a lot.
Sometimes I think that goes overlooked. And so I thank you for saying that.
Yeah,
and, you know, there's a lot of times end users that mask under a name or just want to cut out the middleman, they'll call it. It's not the best fit. Again, our product takes a lot of support. There's a lot of technicality. There's service.
Yeah.
So if we try to service those guys, it's not good for the brand. It leaves a bad taste in their mouth.
Yeah, for sure, man.
And me working as – I had worked at United Rentals, you know, being familiar with the merchandise, I've been in the dealer's shoes.
Yeah.
So I know that, you know, if you've invested that in that inventory and you're making some slim margin because everybody's got it, you know, that's not ideal. So we want to make sure
– yeah.
That you're being rewarded and that fits right.
Yeah, and I also respect that. You coming from the biggest rental company in the world, you know the game, right? Where I've met guys before that were selling for a company, Sara Lee, selling bread, and then they're trying to sell you, you know, skid steers. Yes. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, it's different, man.
We're in a different, I mean, it's a niche.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say niche. It's weird. I mean, it's amazing. And some of the notes we were looking at, we're Carhartt store.
Yeah.
And I'm answering a phone call for a nut and a bolt 1 minute. And then I'm quoting $50,000 on a deal.
Yeah.
And not only that, I got to make sure you have everything you need.
Yeah.
Because when it shows up and they're ready to work and they got six guys like this week, right? Had they not had something.
Right.
It's on me.
That's right.
So it goes from technical to small dollar to consumable, so it's a wide variety, and really we're talking earlier, you know, as a manufacturer's rep,
mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of see it from left to right: the material components that we buy from to make equipment, that you buy from and you sell to end users. So mm-hmm. kind of that whole span and where we fit in that. So I want to make sure I'm doing my job and I'm supporting you to do your job. And then that does sometimes include me skipping a step to go make sure end users are happy. Whether you call and say, hey, they've got a product down, they can't find parts, they've got a product they've bought before you guys acquired them, you know. You know, so being that support. And if I just stay in my lane and only do that and just say, hey, Chris has bought for this quarter, he's good, I'm hands off. Well, you're still going to be sitting on that same equipment.
That's right.
Six months from now. So
that's right.
And same thing, I think there has to be, you know, you guys provide service, you fixed our product and other products. So you have to kind of step out of your lane and provide that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't, you're not on the job site with your customer, know what works and what doesn't, then they're going to silently leave you and you're not going to know why, because you're selling them something, they don't like it, they go somewhere else. And then you don't show up on the job site and say, well, why are you buying this shovel? You know, then there's probably reasons for that. So that kind of is where we land, and you know, you got to get a little bit out of your lane. You can't jump all the lanes.
Yeah, and I mean, what you just brought up is a fabulous point. So I guess I mean, and this is question just coming up off my head is, if you got to make sure your dealers are going to support the customer that they're selling the product to.
Yes.
Right. Because if not, they're going to call the end user. Are going to call you and be like, hey man, I bought this from these guys. I can't get no help.
Correct. Right.
Yeah. So that's
and it happens, and so that's where. You know, I mean, I'm going to hold to a standard. If there's multiple dealers quoting it, then it's that part's to handle.
That's right.
when end users do say, who sells this? Well, I can say, hey, they keep it in stock, yeah, or they can support it, or here's your options. You know, it depends on the market.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's a big, big
part. Yeah, I would say that means, I mean, that means a lot, you know. I mean, because, yeah, you're trusting the people to stock your product and also fix it or whatever. But, you know, they got to hold, the dealers got to hold to the service as well.
Well, and I always laugh. I know when things have gone good or bad because I get a phone call. And if I get a phone call, I say, hey, Thomas, yeah, man. And it says, remember that saw you sold somebody? And I'm like, we got a problem.
Right.
Or I get a call, hey, Thomas, remember that saw we sold him? Then I'm like, probably going to buy a second one. Like,
yeah.
Like that, the we or you is tells me where this call is going to go.
Where it's
and when it's
go.
Like the saw you sold him, okay, well, I mean, there's got to be that level one support from a dealer. If not, then sometimes it's not a good fit.
Oh, for sure, man. Any stories or memories stand out?
Yeah.
From let's just say being in the field, on the sales floor, working at United or nowadays or I mean, I guess even the golf course, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, golf course. I mean, again, great opportunity just to be in front of people. You know, you're 15, 16 years old dealing with, you know, adults that are there in a recreation basis, but, you know, you've got to behave and not, you know, it's not just a regular retail job. My time at United Rentals is really good. I kind of treat it like an internship. Just kind of started out in the shop, worked my way in the inside. I had a great boss, Corey Bassetti, still there. And he really took the time to, you know, I could go to school during the day and I'd work the back half of the day at the store, but I could pick his brain, and I really started to see real world versus textbook, and my grades went down a little bit, but I mean, I was really like, I got it.
Right.
And so I didn't study as much, but the effort versus reward were there because, I mean, I was getting real world. Hey, we got to sell it, collect it, you know, fix it, whatever, all that kind of fun. So he was a good influence, kind of really gave me a lot of a time, not just, hey, come to work and leave work.
Yeah.
And then so that inside sales, again, that pace is just something you're not going to get at another job. So that was a quick one. As I got into the supply and merchandise role, I really handled a lot of that in Raleigh and when I was at Greensboro. That was a big focus for United Rentals at the time. So, and that's where we ran into a lot of stuff together. But
sure did.
A big guy that influenced me, Jim Cook from Wacker.
Man, what a dude.
Just a great guy. And so my interactions with him, I was, you know, and again, that technicality of him selling, showing me new product, it always kind of caught my ear. I was like, man, I think working for a manufacturer would be a pretty cool gig. I think I could do okay at that. And so anyway, didn't work out, left the industry for 4 years, but then came back and have that actually had been able to meet with him a couple times prior to that. You know, he just passed away.
Yeah, I did.
Year and a half, 2 years ago, but
yeah,
what a great influence.
What a good man, and honestly, one of those vendors that I'll never forget and love dealing with, like just a good person.
Yes,
but great to work with, man. Just I can see his smile right
yes.
now, like just happy all the time. What a good guy, and you get those vendors, man, that I'll never forget, right? That influence you, that you remember dealing with, you love dealing with. I mean, that's, yeah, that means
a
lot,
I was
man.
A 20-year-old kid working at United, and he always knew me, always checked with me, knew me by name. And then as I came back, and I don't know, so then got to deal with it. But anyway, that was pretty cool. And then, you know, prior to that, influenced my dad. Mm-hmm. Growing up with him, he grew up, you know, growing up around him, he sold janitorial equipment and supplies, and so I mean, that was probably my first looker, I guess, at really seeing a dealer. And I remember him spreading the catalog about this time of year, January, spreading the catalogs out on the floor, getting every brand right. And, I mean, going on sales calls with him, sitting in an office, up under a machine, working on a machine, show him how to get chemicals going. I mean, I've walked through plants, probably broke every OSHA rule you should, at 12 to 14 years old, just walking through just because I was with dad at work that day. But just seeing him and kind of the same thing was, I remember, you know, jobs where he could save money by saying, you know, if you clean it, you don't have to replace it. And I don't know, just many stories like that. And customers, you know, or people that know him, you sell toilet paper in a small town, you get to know everybody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody knows him.
Yeah.
But that was always a cool, you know, seeing that. So that, I think that kind of set me up from, I mean, I remember working at United Rentals. It was a big deal, inside or outside sales. And I was like, I don't know, I'm a sales rep. Sales reps to sales. I'd grown up around him. He was always a sales rep, covered the area. So, you know, just how he deals with people with integrity and making sure they're happy, treated right. So that was probably my first good look around it.
What a great look, man. Holy cow. I mean, how do you get any better than that?
I mean,
riding with your dad and seeing – I was just thinking about Callahan brake pads, like Chris Farley, you know, like, you know, he's under his wing, but you're seeing him work, you're seeing him sell, you're seeing him his demeanor, you're seeing how he handles everything. Man,
I remember he was the first guy with a cell phone that I remember. Yeah. 1998 beside the van.
Yes, sir.
You know, he had the speakerphone set up. That was well ahead of its time. But he'd get a phone call, you know, that urgency was there. And I'd be writing orders in the passenger seat as he's driving down so he could then call it into his office, you know, and put it on the next delivery truck. But,
And he's still the ultimate salesman as I'm buying chemicals from him right now.
That's
true. He's still killing the game, man.
Still pushing the chemicals.
What a man.
Learned a lot.
Yeah, he's a good man. Shout out to Phil, man. Yeah, dude. So I guess, you know, what products or product lines do you guys offer in your division? Like, what's your main focus? I know, you know, construction's like, you know what I mean? But it's like, what do you got? What's your main?
Yeah, so Husqvarna. So we're kind of channeled into just the construction. You know, everybody knows. A lot of people know Husqvarna from the chainsaws and lawn equipment.
Yeah.
So we're a separate division, and so our headquarters based out of Kansas, as far as the U.S. goes. And so we focus mostly on concrete cutting and coring, and finishing. So since my start here 10 years ago, we've had 6 or 8 acquisitions. So that's really changed the scope. You know, we started, it was core drills and chop saws and power, floor saws and some grinding. And, you know, now we've got trowels, compaction. You guys sold a trench roller this week. So thank you, you know.
And a shaver. Yes, sir. I guess flooring.
Flooring. Yep. So the flooring's been big. Dust vacs. Mm-hmm. So it's really opened up. And so that opens up to new dealers that we normally wouldn't have dealt with in the past.
Right.
Just because certain ones, again, going back to dealers, what they're good at, certain ones are good at certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's open. That's a lot to manage.
Yeah.
You know, we don't divide it out, really. But it's all just concrete, nothing lawn and garden. So that's what we have. And then Husk, it's really it's a group of acquisitions. So if we've got we have trowels, but we didn't start the trowel from scratch. It was something we bought. So it's an acquisition, and then we slowly merge it into our line. So really we can go from compacting the dirt all the way to polishing the concrete. So and Dave's a good example of that, right? So he was shaving concrete.
Yep.
He's one of the few that will pour. Normally, I'm dealing with guys that pour and finish or guys that polish.
Yep.
He's one guy that kind of can take the whole scope. So he's one of those guys I learn a lot from because I pick his brain. Why don't you like this? Why do you run that? You know, and he'll tell me very candidly.
But
that's kind of where we're at. We're just on the construction side. And then, you know, we are an equipment dealer. We're a little different because we also sell the consumables.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it's a little bit different. So we're highly technical in the equipment. We also have to be highly frequent on the consumables, just like you as a dealer. If you're not constantly checking, and that's our opportunity to sell the equipment. That's a nice big sale.
Yeah.
But the consumables that go with it. So we're not just, hey, we sold you something. We'll see you 5 years from now.
Yeah, it makes a lot of business sense, you know, because you see people we sell this, but they don't sell the blades and the diamonds and all that. But if you can do it all, why not, right?
Yeah. So we want that. That's a great opportunity for us.
Yeah.
And that's a great opportunity for our dealers. And that's what we hope is attractive. And if it's not, then that's, again, a good indicator of what dealers work or don't. You know, they should want that and having that frequency. So if it's not just a one-time pick up a big check and done.
How do you guys support and provide the resources for your dealers and customers?
I try to make it between myself and whatever dealer as much as possible. So I want to make sure the dealer can, the new guy knows, hey, what this equipment does over time, what to do if something goes wrong, you know, to grow that. So that's what I want to try to accomplish.
Yeah, I know. And like you do, I guess, lunch and learns, you'll do on the job demo training, you'll do. I know y'all offer training in South Carolina.
And then, we've got one in there. Kansas. Yeah. So I've held some in South Carolina just locally because we can't always get somebody to go to Kansas, so that I'll have it's a day and a half training in South Carolina. But then the other thing I'm always trying to do too is, again, that scale from left to right of components OEM or components to manufacturer to dealer to end users, having to look to my left and right and why isn't this dealer getting it? Or why do they not want to sell this category? And trying to figure out, so looking outside of just if I just open up the catalog and hope people bought, then I'm going to miss something. So try to figure out why and spend some time outside of just being a manufacturer's rep.
Yeah.
On the job sites and the dealers.
I'm still wanting them to bring that Sweden trip back, bro. You know what I mean? Like, I remember it's like if you did such and such, you could go to Sweden. So.
Yeah, I was right. Yeah, you got rid of that right a couple years after I started.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I never made it, man, so I didn't sell enough. But maybe I still got goals.
You're earning your way back.
I got goals in life to go to Sweden, man. Sam, before we go, I'm taking you with me. What do you see? Like, what common mistakes do you see contractors making? And how can the dealer or the manufacturer, you know, help them? Or what's, like, I guess, fix some of those problems that you see, like, every contractor or a lot making?
Contractors, I think what I see is I go, a lot of times I'm called in for help, support, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you go into a shop, they're complaining about the field. You go in the field, they complain because the equipment's not working.
Right.
And I've finally honed this in and figured out, were they just not like each other? But what really happens, and we'll just use soft cut as an example, right? So end of the day, you've poured, you finished, you've been there since 2 a.m. Well, cutting is the last thing you got to do.
That's right.
And you've been there for 14 hours. Mm-hmm. So guess how that saw gets put back in the trailer?
Oh, yeah.
Not carefully.
Right.
So they just throw it in there. It needs parts to replace it, and the shop's not happy.
Yeah.
Well, the shop has no sympathy because they're like, why'd you bring it back? You know, well, they're coming in the next morning finding a broke saw.
Yeah.
And so there's a few shops, I was at one recently, where they intertwine a little bit, and that seems to help. So they both kind of catch a little sympathy for each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I think having, from a contractor standpoint, having that shop and field relationship where your shop guy goes out to the job site and sees, oh, well, man, this concrete truck doesn't show up on time every time. And it didn't start on the first try, and they had to spray ether to get the thing started. You know,
it's
not perfect.
Right.
So I think having those guys talk more and maybe train together, and they it can't be shop and field because that's where I see failures. And, I mean, it sells a lot of equipment because they don't take care of it as good.
Sure.
But I'd say that. And then a lot of times there's probably the project manager level, superintendent level, just knowing what's out there. There's a lot of new equipment.
Yeah.
Or ways to do it. And, you know, talking to multiple, again, talking to your vendor, talking to your manufacturer, that tricks and trade tricks and stuff like that, that if you're working for the same company every time, you know, they've got a process and they follow it. I mean, they got to get the job done.
Yeah.
But just knowing what's out there, whether you go to World of Concrete every year or other trade shows. But there's amazing, you know, I mean, I'm not a concrete finisher, but sometimes I'll, you know, point out to do this with the equipment, or I've seen this done and it's like a light bulb goes off and I'm thinking, man, that's cool to add that value.
What you just said is, like, I had a guy, I can't remember, they called me, they had 4 to 8 saws broke. I think we need to go up to the such and such saw, the 4200. I'm like, I don't think it's the saw. You know what I mean? I mean, if you want to go, great, that's like the Cadillac. But, and then I remember seeing these trucks that are outfitted to sit the 4000s and they strap them right and they probably clean them and service them right. They can last forever, right? But then the guy, I mean, I rent them. So I see how they're not taken care of. I see what happens, you know, and we try to keep them running. But on our end, it's a tough thing when people don't take care of it to keep everything running properly and perfect. But I just noticed that from how people haul them and take care of them, that's going to help the life. Now, I'm thankful that people don't, because it increases my sales. So is anybody listening? Just keep doing what you're doing. But if you want to know some ideas, it's out there to do it better.
I would just say to optimize your experience.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to, you're going to buy saw, you're going to wear it out. Yeah. But while you got it, I mean, take some care of it. But yeah, I mean, that's, and again, working across from dirt to polishing, you know, it's a little bit of everything. Everything's going to take a beating. End of the day, it doesn't get washed down or cleaned out or pre-sprayed. You know, it's done.
Yeah.
You know, on the dealer side, I see guys that have room for improvement. We'll call that, that. You know, equipment's not, it's not a truckload commodity. You can't just drop it off. And when you get that phone call that something's wrong, you got to answer it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's just something, once you've done it, you're used to it. I actually almost expect, hey, we just did a startup. Okay. First call, they're probably going to figure out how to, you know, not remember something. So let's get something and turned around. But I think for a dealer, you got to be ready to service it. And when I say service, I don't mean for every dealer that's going to have to be able to do a oil change every 50 hours. But are you delivering on a pallet? Are you delivering it ready to start working?
Yeah.
Are you delivering it with blades to go with it? Are you delivering it with blades in a vac or whatever might accompany that? So I think, you know, there's different levels, but at a minimum, be ready to answer the phone.
Sure.
And take that. So I think sometimes there, and there's certain dealers and there's certain reps. There's certain dealers we have that I might, you know, might have 20 reps and I deal with three of them.
Yeah.
Certain reps just, they just don't have an interest. And that's fine. You know, it's, and when I talk to the management, I'm like, hey, that's cool. I don't want to force something on them because they're not comfortable selling it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's really knowing the market. But I'd say dealers knowing if you're going to sell the equipment, you know, you got to be ready. And what's cool is a lot of times, you know, I kind of divide our market into rental and then material. Yeah. You guys do both, you know, that's cool. But if you're, a lot of times they want that material, those big material orders. Well, those guys a lot of times like to buy from where they buy equipment. So if you're not willing to go out and maybe it takes four or five passes to get that first sale, it's a longer sales cycle, then you're going to continue to lose those deals to guys that are willing to invest that time. And then guess who gets the load of blades and pans and truckloads of stuff that you really want. So that's kind of what I see of who sets up. And you guys do a great job of that.
And that kind of segues into, what makes a good dealer?
I always say knowing what you've got to sell. Yeah. So, and then knowing how to use it. Because a lot of times, again, end users, they don't spend all their time researching and whatnot. So they might be buying the wrong saw.
Yeah. It's good to have a dealer that can give you the right tool for the project. Absolutely.
I mean, I was standing at a dealer years ago and the guy was going to go, he had a X150 saw. And I was like, that's cool, man. You know, did you guys pour today? Nah, man. Tearing out a driveway. And I was like, whoa.
Okay.
I stopped another. That was, you know, thankfully I was standing there. But I said, hey, this didn't really work. We need to look at something different. Stopped another guy on the phone one time for, you know, he was going to send out a stump grinder instead of a scare fryer because they had some high spots on the concrete. And I said, hey, this isn't really my role. At this time, we didn't even sell scare fryers. This was before we had scare fryers. I said, you need to put that guy on hold. And he was so appreciative.
Yeah.
But I mean, my man was about to send out
a stump grinder
and make a huge mess. I could see where the wheels were turning.
Oh, yeah.
I got it. But, you know, so for properly train, know what you got. And then you have to retrain. A lot of times I'll have dealers say, well, I got some new guys. Well, if they've been there a week, that's not enough.
Right.
But they also can't just come once. Because what happens after, let's say they've been there 6 months. And I'll give you, Kale's probably a good example. He's probably due to come back and get retrained. He's he and Tyler came down to Columbia 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But between then and now, so many situations have come up that I don't know what situations. He's not going to, if I said, hey, what have you seen between then and he's not going to remember. Mm-hmm. But as soon as we go back through that training, something's going to pop.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like, oh, that's why. And then here's something I can take forward. So it's a kind of a constant retraining too. So I think if you're not willing to invest that time, and that's, I mean, stay in that one or two categories and, you know, don't try to grow outside that. But the end users really appreciate that. And when I talk to end users, they're appreciative of guys that can add that value. Because if you're the last mile, right? We're a brand. You're the last mile that delivers it. How is that delivered?
Yeah. And what do you think is the best training in your mind for dealers? Is it going to the schools and stuff?
I mean, yes.
Yeah. That's what
I mean, speaking for ours, our guys do a phenomenal job. You know, it's 3 days. I started doing some local here just because we're not drivable to there. You have to fly. But I think we sent 6 or 8 people out this week. And we also have some technical trainings for mechanics.
Yeah.
So it's a full schedule of
options. Is the mechanic, is there a school they go to, or do y'all, you come to them?
We're starting to offer that up where we'll come out.
Yeah.
So we'll just charge to have our guys come out.
Yeah.
But most of the guys will just go in. The cool thing about our products is you can learn a lot. We're going to show you our product, use our product.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's got a Honda engine on it, so that can apply to other items too. So sure, we're not going to just pigeonhole the one item, our items. I like doing the remotes or having technical guys with me and, like, going through your fleet.
Yeah.
We did one 2 weeks ago with a dealer, and 3 items were green tagged, ready to go. Yeah. Okay. We needed about 6 parts to make that thing right. And it was just the mechanic didn't quite understand.
Yeah.
Or just because it turns on doesn't mean it's going to engage.
Yeah.
Or it's one rental from really having a problem. But those guys, and so once you show them their own equipment versus showing, hey, here's what we're going to train you on something new, showing them their own product really opens their eyes of how they can make that better.
I'm writing myself. I'd like to have that because
just come to you.
Yeah. Because the thing is, it's like, I got a rental fleet, right, ready to rent. And then it's like, it's not ready to rent, you know? And it's like,
but. And it's not an attack.
I want it done right. So if I have somebody kind of going through it like that with them and say, man, this is what we need to do, that's what I'm looking for, man.
Well, I like it because we'll typically get a parts order out of it.
Yeah.
But I mean.
Oh, yeah, that too, right?
But again, if just using rental as an example,
yeah.
I mean, they can rent a plate temp anywhere, right? But right. If they're always having to fix yours takes 6 pulls versus 2.
Sure.
You know, that's setting it. You're only setting yourself up. And if your techs aren't open to hear that, I mean, I'm not a mechanic. I'm not a tech. Same. But I can just say, hey, this is about time to replace. Or you're right on the verge. Has this been greased?
Yeah.
You know, little things like that. That can ultimately save them a headache.
Yeah. What's some big complaints, you know, or problems in the field?
A lot of times it's just stuff not working properly.
Yeah.
And so often it's the expectations. They're comparing it to, you had a customer that was running 2 different machines at 2 different horsepowers. And mm-hmm. So they were complaining. Well, I was like, well, this one's got 20 more horsepower. It's gonna perform different.
Right. It is different. Right.
I had
right.
I spent a lot of time with soft cut on slabs. You know, guys saying, hey, this saw's not cutting deep enough.
Right.
Well, I go out there and they're running 2 saws, 2 different models of ours.
Uh-huh.
One's much older, but its max cut is 1.5 inches. Okay. And they're cutting maybe 0.5 inch. And the guy's like, all he can do to keep up with the saw, I'm just flying. And I was like, well, 1, you probably need to slow the guy down. And 2, there was, I forget what the problem was. There was some kind of part holding it up from dropping all the way down the cut.
Yeah.
So they're not happy because they're not right. getting the depth of cut. They're worried about it, you know, causing cracking. And they should be. But they're literally the guys running laps around the place cutting, you know, 1/2 inch deep.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think a lot of times it comes down to you just realize they're not loading it right. And they don't realize loading it right or wrong. So a lot of times, and it's when I go with a dealer, like a co-call, a lot of times they are more apt to listen for some reason. I get more, even though they might not have the relationship with me, they've got it with your rep. But they're a little bit more apt to listen when I say, hey, you guys are doing this, but if you load it this way or do this more properly or, you know, they tend to stick a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. And in our industry, I feel like a lot of times it's the end user. But I mean, again, sometimes we don't have the equipment, you know, ready to rent.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of both, I guess I see, you know.
And there's times, you know, say, hey, well, this thing's not optimal. You know, we've got service centers or we've got dealers. This is as much as you can do. We don't want you to go any further than this. But just knowing that support's there, I think that's one point I try to be different on that, you know, we're not a big brand. We're hiding behind a wall. Like you got a problem, you call me. So
you can find, any, I guess, real stories where, or a project that you can think of where the machine held up under pressure, and you know, the contractor was able to avoid problems because of the support or the training.
You know,
so you have machine held up. under pressure, was able to get supported. I don't know if there's any certain big jobs or
something that one you can was remember, where the saw out. Wasn't cutting deep enough mm-hmm. comes to mind.
Yeah.
Well, one, we had a meeting on this week, right? So how many slabs was saved with hyper trowel?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So that really came in. That's come in clutch four or five times now. And now we've got somebody else asking about, mm-hmm. hey, how can I be proactive? Which I was so thankful for. They didn't have a damaged slab they're trying to fix in 2 days.
Yeah.
So that's been cool. And then to take that testimony and say, hey, like, we can confidently, this wasn't really what it's made for, but it works really well.
Yeah.
And I've got five examples of how this works.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, like, you guys already run trials, you know, you guys do that.
Yeah.
So that's been nice. I had another opportunity with some power cutters
mm-hmm.
to where we were going up against a competitor that sells direct. And we were able to sell it. They switched from, this is called brand A, B, and C. They switched from brand A, and they never wanted to work on a power cutter again.
Right.
Well, brand C looked really attractive because it was going to be a lease setup to where they never had to work on it.
Yep.
If it breaks, you send it in, and it comes back 2 or 3 days later. So it was a big uphill battle because we don't have a lease-type program.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been 8-9 years ago. They bought 30 or 35 saws. You know, it was a nice, wow. a nice sale.
Yeah.
But this was a long process. And I remember going to the startup. We got there like 6 a.m. down in the Charlotte area, did their, you know, and here we are, just switched them from brand A mm-hmm. to B. They didn't go with C, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, you know, and versus a lease option at 1 year, they were going to have to turn those saws in and restart their payments.
Right.
And so just having to explain to them, well, with mine, you're going to buy it. At the end of a year, sell it for half what you paid for it. Right. There's always a market for you.
Sure.
But sure enough, I got that equipment manager on board to send out quarterly parts reminders.
Mm-hmm.
But here comes at the end of year one, I'm thinking, here we go, 35 saw sales, it's going to be great. They bought five because now they're taking care of them. And really, at the end of the day, they had a lot less money because they could still sell the saws. Mm-hmm. They're not having to lease them and restart this contract and whatnot. So that was a cool win, and that has continued on to where they literally every year they might buy 3 to 6 saws, and they're not working on them. So when they go out, they're out. They just, you know, they now know how to properly maintain them.
Yeah.
So that was a big win and a big market share grab. And then personally, because it was an uphill battle, one, switching them brands, and then two, going up against, you know, somebody that's selling them direct.
Yeah, and it was satisfying to get the deal. And then with their preventative maintenance.
And that goes to show, though, when you do take care of it. And I see companies that have crews that uh-huh. own a saw.
Yeah.
You have hardly any problems. Mm-hmm. When you have fleets or saws that just get shifted around. Yeah. You know, the finger gets pointed a lot faster. So, but that was a cool one. I won't forget that one.
Yeah,
I had a lot of meetings.
And especially since it stayed so many years of the continued success, yes. And it speaks for yourself and the product, right? So, I mean, and the maintenance and everybody doing the right thing. Advice for contractors picking the tools for their business. Rent, buy. I guess that kind of goes into that, what you just said about leasing or buying or whatever. What's your advice? I guess just everything's different, whether you buy or lease.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the situation and the customer.
Yeah, the trend, you know, the rental market's gained so much traction. They'd rent a wider array of things now. A lot of what we used to think was niche is almost standard
mm-hmm.
in a lot of rental fleets. And that liability has been pushed so far up the chain, and you know, owning that, people now realize, well, if I own it, I got to move it, I got to store it, I got to mm-hmm. pay a guy that works on it. So the renting has just become more popular because of that. That pushes, you know, pushes that. I would say I try to help guys, you know, just going back to the percentage of how often are you using it.
Yeah.
And then if it's a piece where it's critical, you have it at 2 a.m., you better have two of them.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that timing is key. But if it's something you're doing day in, day out, your whole business is relying on.
Yeah. And that's the way, like when I'm renting stuff, I'm like, okay, you're going how far and you got this pour, you want one machine. I'm ready to send you three.
Right.
I mean, just because.
Well, because you're somebody, you've been out on the job and you realize.
Yeah. And that, and when it, if something doesn't go right, and anything go right, brand new or 10 years old, I've seen it. I've lived it every year of my life. And I want to prepare for the worst, I guess you could say. You know what I mean? It's like, I want, and that's when I try to, I'm trying to do better in, you know, even our small stamp sets. It's like, I want every stamp, every skin, the roller thing, the tamper. I want everybody to have what they need to succeed, you know? And I feel like that's the way the customers, in my mind, should think. And I guess a business probably does. They might have 10 riders on their truck because they're thinking two or three are going to fail, right? They might have four saws because one or two might fail. And I think that's the way it should be, just because it needs to be to make sure you're successful.
Yeah, I think I've had guys that floor grinding comes to mind that want to go out and get into floor grinding, and they buy one machine, and they snag something and break a part on it, and they're, you know, like, well, you have to be down a couple of days till you get a part.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's okay if you're getting out of the gate, but as you get into this more and more, if you don't have a backup machine, if your whole business depends on this,
yeah,
you know, you wouldn't just buy one of anything. And I think in our industry, what you're talking about, there for the service to be there has to be some redundancy, because you're talking about concrete, right?
Right.
And we're not talking about if you're framing a house, that would, you know, let's say we got the subfloor in, other than maybe it's getting rained on. It could wait. You know, we can come back. Maybe you can shift your guys. You got fresh concrete hitting the ground.
Yeah.
So I think the concrete trade within constructions, it can be even more escalated just because of that. And, you know, it's a high-pressure job that these guys are getting there at 2 a.m. for that reason. Yeah. And, you know, if everything went right, they could all start pouring at 6 a.m. But that's the, you know.
Yeah. You got the truck showing up on time. You got the pump can go down. The machines go down. It's a lot, man. It's an intense job, man. It really is. And I mean,
you've been out there enough, and that's good that you see that, because
kudos to those guys.
What does it cost you to send an extra Georgia buggy if it just sits there?
Yeah.
And, but, you know, they're not going to beat it up, use it to death, know. So I think that's the best, because what's a service call mean if you're 2 hours away, you know?
Yeah, and that goes into, like, I think a lot of times investing in the right equipment, whether it does cost a little more or does cost you to have get a couple more pieces so that when you go to the job you're ready, is beneficial, 100%.
And that's, you know, I've seen some customers now, you know, they send the mechanics out to the job site. That's nice to have.
Mm-hmm.
One, again, it gets the field and shop working together. But two, I mean, either if you're not going to buy extra pieces, you better have, you know, some backup plan.
Right.
And the timing of that is so critical.
Give me your view on where we're headed, the construction market, tool market, the demand. Rental versus ownership.
Well, you know, like I said, rental trend is, I think, going to continue. Just again, we're pushing that liability. You know, there's no longer a GC. You don't call on one GC that's doing every trade and self-performing.
Right.
I do feel like there's some self-performing coming back. Maybe after COVID, people said, "Hey, I want to control my schedule."
Yeah.
So maybe you're seeing some more of that. But, you know, there for how long did you went from self-performing GCs to where they were construction management, to where it was subs of subs, and there's probably still some of that going on. But
yeah,
I see that trend and that liability just kind of gets a little bit more watered down, and that just makes the timeline tighter and the pressure there. So that seems to be that rent versus buy. Yeah, that trend's going to rental. So yeah, I would say, stay in your lane as an end user, but you have to be ready. If you go down, who's your first call? Are you buying another one, servicing it, whatnot? Having that network, and just like you and I work together, I think the relationship, the dealers I have a good relationship with, your relationship to your vendor can be just as important as a customer.
Absolutely.
And it took me a long time to realize that, and I was like, man, you know, that if I put myself in your shoes, if you really want to be a good partner and just, you know, talk once a month, it's not going to go that far. So, and that's where, referrals, opportunities. Hey, Thomas, I got this guy. Let's go see this. Hey, Chris, this guy is, you know, he doesn't have a current supplier. He needs to buy this. So, and that's where that can come in to help both of us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, I feel like a good vendor relationship, partnership is what I feel. Yeah. Is like, man, I mean, you're helping us. I mean, you're helping our business. You're helping us do the right thing. And you're recommending the right equipment, the right tools or tooling. And like you said, you're not trying to just push stuff on us. You're recommending training. And the more importance I see of training and support, for not only us, but the end users is like, it's like what we said, man. It's like, I believe in training more now than I ever have with mechanics, with lunch and learns from the staff, because it's nice when somebody calls and somebody knows what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You go to Lowe's and Home Depot, there's people running from you because they don't know what they're talking about. It's okay. Their business is never, I mean, their business is going to keep rolling.
You're a different level of
Yeah, but I mean, but it's nice when you do go somewhere and they're like, how can I help you? And they knock it out of the park, right? You're like, man, appreciate that. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, you know? So that means a lot, I think.
But I think, too, yeah. the trend and going down the list here, of the more dealers bring us in, I mean, I can go call on end users all day. We can't, you know, we're not going to sell to them, but
sure.
If you, the value is you've got that relationship. They're more willing to listen, see new product. I love showing new product. You know, we showed that light stand, light tower of ours.
Yes.
A few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So in that, you know, that's just an eye opener. The guys don't know they're out there. So right. It's amazing. Hey, we're here to talk about, hey, but let me just show you this new product, you know, and, you know, tying it back to the Jim Cook days. He always had, you know, something new, something to talk about, whatnot. So always, you know, it's almost a constant toe and show of some degree of,
yes.
You know, hey, we got a new trial model coming out. Here's what's going to change on it. Here's the benefits of it.
Yes.
And then taking that with a dealer out to end users to say, hey, here's what we've got. Here's what's changed. You may not need one today.
Right.
But when you do need one, whether you're buying ours or others, here's what we've done to improve it. And otherwise, they may never see that, right? We're not on TV commercials and, mm-hmm. you know, highly marketed. You know, we're kind of a niche item, so it takes that.
It takes people pushing it. I agree. What's Husqvarna going to focus on or should focus on to stay relevant in the upcoming years?
Well, in the past few years and now, you know, had a big battery push. You know, truthfully, it's been slower, I think, than I wanted and expected. It's weird to see other trades and it just clicks. And it's, again, yeah. Talking to end users, they've opened my eyes recently. It's like, hey, you're trying to go from gas and jump to battery versus guys running like a hammer drill, right? Go from corded to battery. So we're skipping two steps.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's concrete trade versus like framers and whatnot. You know, you mm-hmm. go to a job site, guys are running, they got 20 DeWalt chargers
yeah.
running framing nailers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because the pushback is typically, well, what if I show up, my batteries are dead? I'm like, well, what if you show up and you're out of gas and you got to go to a gas?
Right,
you know,
right,
you
right.
have to change that habit.
Yeah.
And so it's been like pushing rope in some cases. And so there's been a few items we've had that I push more than others. And I'm like, when they show up and they need a corded saw or a corded drill, just hand them this. And, yeah. you know, if you give them two batteries, you know, but it's a change. So I feel like that's a big push of what we're moving towards. We've got more stuff coming out of World Concrete that'll be announced, battery, especially on our larger battery platforms coming mm-hmm. out. So it's eye-opening once you get guys to use it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's been a big focus and slower than wanted. But
yeah, and I think everybody's on that train. I'm optimistic because I do like to send a piece of rental equipment that's going to start every time.
Yes.
and I like to have that case and say, put five batteries in there and a charger. I like to be prepared,
mm-hmm.
but I do like that aspect of battery over gas. I mean, not on everything, but I think it is going to be a good for rental company as well moving forward.
And you know, not to get stuck on battery, but there's a big difference too of the size. And, you know, we've got two different battery sizes. There's a reason for that. And, mm-hmm. and people sometimes have had bad experience with prior batteries, consumer quality batteries. You know, we're in a, again, niche commercial grade. You know, we're talking about that light works off a 94 volt that, mm-hmm. you know, runs other stuff too. So,
yeah.
But that's been a big push, and that's been a lot of my towing shows for the past couple of years has been that. So, again, I think that's a lot of seed planting. And at some point, that's going to come to fruition. Because once the end users do run it, and I, you know, see their eyes light up of, man, this is not, you know, it's not beat me to death all day.
Yeah.
I think it will come through.
Yeah. What's day to day like for you? I guess day in the life. We can video you next, but yeah. Day in the life of your job.
Day to day, you know, I have a frequency I try to keep with every market.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm normally working from my office at least a day a week. You know, I'm reviewing things that need to be done and then setting up firm and semi-firm appointments, because a lot of times I'm going to see an end user. You know, that could take from anywhere to 30 minutes to 4 hours. But I'm going to be in that market, and then I'll see, you know, kind of see dealers around that. And then kind of planning, hey, what do I need to bring with me this week that this dealer hasn't seen before? I don't want to show them the same thing three times, you know. But who have I not met in this market? So I'm trying to meet new end users, meet somebody new at a dealer. You know, so it's not just one person. You know, you're not the only person here I deal with, right? So
I need to be that. No, I'm just kidding.
So, you know, walking in today, you know, seeing a couple people here, you know, making sure, you know, it's not just – the sales or the manager, is the shop happy? What's going on? You know, it's the little hangups that'll get you. So really trying to make, you know, hey, are there, I've reviewed, you know, when I go see them, hey, you've got no open orders. So that's cool. You're not waiting on anything, right? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I am waiting on something. Well, come to find out, we never received the order. Yep. Well, you've been waiting for 2 weeks and whatever happened, got lost in cyberspace. You know, we never got the order. Well, let's fix it. So it's amazing how often just being that frequency or, hey man, while you're here, can we look at this? Yeah, okay, cool. So I try to give a heads up, hey, I'm, you know, be in the area. But just spending that time, and it's a mix between rental fleets and material houses, stocking houses. You know, this week I had a first-time customer bought a diesel saw to put in the rental fleet. So I showed up, and sure enough, it is actually stuck in neutral just from the factory. So had they sent that on rent, blade ain't gonna turn.
That's right.
So, you know, they weren't from there, you know, had no idea how to do that. We got it figured out, you know, did the walk around, and their level of comfort's, you know, way higher than it was. That was something I kind of forced them to do. They don't have to. Right. I don't have to.
Right.
But I know that as that thing goes out on rent, the first call is probably gonna be me to put them in touch with a technical person, but we probably squashed a lot of that. And I do a lot of, hey, this will probably be a service call. They're gonna think this is a problem. This is really a feature that if they've got the button turned too far, it's not going to go down or whatnot. So trying to save that. So again, trying to put myself in the dealer's shoes to make it so I'm not thought of as a pain, thought of, hey, what more can we do with Husqvarna?
Oh, no. I mean, I'll give it to you that probably more than any vendor I see, you're hands-on, like on job sites, doing demos, fixing problems, checking on our guy who does purchasing. You're killing it on that aspect. And there's a lot that don't come by. And some people got a good enough product, they don't really need to. But, the support and the help and the demos and whatever, I think is huge.
Oh, it is, yeah.
I mean, from a dealer side, it's a big deal, again, because you're getting that hands-on, you're getting technical training, you're getting – a lot of stuff that you don't see a day to day.
And that'll be our move into 26. So I had a smaller area this year. 26 is going to be more strategic as I've kind of dialed it in. Where I need to be more frequent is if your reps aren't asking me to go with them so frequently, I'm going to keep asking you.
Yeah.
Because we don't have to spend every call about Husqvarna and the whole call not about Husqvarna. I'm not trying to tie up their day.
Yeah.
But it's such a home run for all of us that end users like that access of seeing something that's new.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just complaining. Maybe they're complaining about another brand. They're looking, you know, it's so many opportunities it could open up.
Yes.
And I've seen it happen time and time again that if I was a dealer, I would set so many days a month just to ride with a manufacturer.
Yeah.
Just because I don't say it makes their job easy, but it just sets the agenda.
Yeah, and on our end, we need to take more advantage of than we do. And I think we don't do enough, and we need to.
I think at 26, that's really what I want to try to push.
And I'm gonna try to push that for myself and guys as well. Piece of equipment you believe every contractor should own?
Tool of everything.
I love that. I love that, brother.
I mean, seriously, if your job is relying, dependent on it, either have a backup rental option, backup plan, but you gotta have.
I think that's super smart, man. I mean, I agree with that 100%. Best piece of advice you've received in business or construction industry?
Everything's gonna break down. Amen. I bought a car from a guy one time. He was good friends with Dad. He said, all I can ever guarantee is at some point, every car is going to break down. And I took that in construction, you know, where people treat stuff even worse, that, you know, either learn how to treat it right, maintain it right, buy extra, you know, just to have a backup. But if you're not going to take care of it, but at some point, you know, everything's got a life.
And to me, since COVID, everything breaks more. I don't know if it's cheaper components, what happened, but everything breaks more brand new. I mean, I see that in my 28 years of renting and this, that, and other, I feel like stuff breaks more than I've ever seen it. And I don't know if it's just all the guys that knew how to use it or shift it out.
There's definitely some of that.
Or something's changed. So there's been a change.
Well, I think some of that, especially the new items, right? An item shows up at your house,
mm-hmm.
you take it out of the box, you plug it in, and it goes. Mm-hmm. Well, that starts to carry over to, you just have that trust in everything. And I mean, I'll give an example. Our trowels, for whatever reason, they get in freight. I don't know what people do at freight houses, but I've seen some of the weirdest injuries that we run them at the factory. Not only do they run them, but how in the world they get these cuts and scrapes, you know, coming in a big crate.
Yes.
So if you don't allow that redundancy or capacity, if you're ordering a trowel today for us to ship it to you to pour on Tuesday, you're setting yourself up for failure.
That's right.
Whether it's an issue we have, whether it's an issue the freight company had, but you got to test it out. And I think a lot of guys are just, not everything's plug and play.
Yeah.
And so I think having that planning, and I thought COVID was going to help with that some, that, you know, and I think we saw a little bit there for a while. Guys were playing a little better, you know. I don't know how long that's going to stick. But you got to have a little, you know, have a little bit of foresight there.
Yeah.
And I think from a dealer, I think that's, you know, a big thing is rather than being the rescue guy in the you know, early hours or late in the day, is bragging more about, hey, I know what you're doing 2 weeks from now. And then 1 week from now saying, hey, you still need this, you know.
Yes.
That's where I see it. And that relieves the pressure up the ladder.
Yeah, and I don't know what I was saying. I lost it. If you weren't in construction sales, what would you be doing? Playing golf? I mean, working golf pro, golf course?
I think anything – I just love the customer experience so much. I think something tied to driving that. It's always been a passion of mine. I do like the technical aspect. So if I was selling something different, I feel like it'd be pretty technical. But other than that, I like working with something on the customer experience world.
Follow
a lot of that stuff.
I think sales and customer service hand in hand. And I'm the same. I mean, I love people. So anything that I could be talking to people and selling would be good. Something that was a failure, mistake that you made and what it taught you.
Probably hung in there too long with certain relationships or customers, you know, where you just think, this is going to get better, and it just doesn't. So invest a lot of time.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, one thing I learned about sales is there's a market and some people that they need to have there has to be some kind of want, you know. You can't force it. Even if like this is right for you. You know, you can show it, lead them to water, but
can't make them drink, man. Yeah. Man, biggest influence in your life?
Oh, definitely Dad. You know, we brought up Dad earlier. Yeah. I mean, it's from personally him being a great example, role model, to our family, and he carries that on today's. And then, you know, like I said, I never realized till a few years ago, looking back, of, you know, how I didn't realize every kid that in middle school wasn't going to work with their dad on sales calls, you know, and fixing machines and whatnot after school. And I remember even putting automatic flushers on toilets. I mean, he'd sold a package, so he had me and my brother, I don't know, go install it, you know.
That's awesome.
So probably some child labor issues there. But no, you know, stuff like that. But he was a great example, great, you know, and hearing his customers now, your dad helped me out with this, and this happened this time, and he found this for me, and I didn't even buy anything from him. He helped, you know, that, you know, that's earned him a great respect, and I think it set a good example for what I try to do.
Oh, yeah, going to church with him, he's a good man inside and out. If he never sells nothing the rest of his life, right. He's a good dude, man. You got any questions for me? Anything we didn't touch on, man, that you want to talk about? Anything I missed? Anything you want
to... I want to know what you would do if you weren't in construction, because I can't see you.
Dude.
You're so molded into
this.
I'm
so glad that you asked, man. So glad that you asked. I would be a hand model.
Hand model?
Yes, sir.
Zoolander?
Yes, sir. No, honestly, man, I think about that all the time. This is all I know. Again, I went for golf course, and that's what I wanted to do, but I have no idea. I mean, it just be around people, man. I don't, something to do with, I guess selling's really all I know. I love sports, so I don't, man.
If I say selling, your street salt, your level of service is what you bring to the market, and that's the following you've had and respected over years that you get that first call.
Yeah.
I mean, hearing Kenny's first story, how he met you.
Yeah.
He brought the saw out.
I got more of those, man.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I mean, to me, I laughed because I was like, yeah.
That's dwindling down, though. Now I'm asleep. I'm not going to answer you.
Right.
I'm like, dude, I'm old now. I'm sorry. I'm call Kale.
I was going to say, you got a team now.
I'll say, Kale. Yeah. But no, yeah, man, I really don't know. I think about it. You know, I don't know. I love what I do, man. This is all I know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what else is it? You know, what else could I do? Probably couldn't get a job anywhere. I mean, definitely probably in the industry, but I don't know if anybody, other than that, I don't know what I do.
It's funny you tell me to work in construction. There's a different image out there, but I mean, it's as technical as anything.
Absolutely.
It really is.
Absolutely.
So anything changing in 26?
For us?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Anything new, getting out of anything?
Oh, God, we'll probably add 700 line items, product lines.
Yeah.
No, I don't know, man. I think I'm looking for a great year, building a great team. No, I'm just looking to get better, man, than we were in the past 5 years. And that going to the next level of training.
Yeah.
That's something as a small business. We just, you know, you jump in the fire and we're ready to rock and roll, man. I want to train better employees. I'm all about treating people right and getting the best employees and keeping them and taking care of them. And it starts with, training, all the resources they need. But 26 for us, I think it's going to be a big year. Got some young gun sales guys, and we're going to get after
it,
man.
I think, you know, selfishly in our world, I think sending them back out to the training.
Yeah.
And we'll do some cold calls. I mean, that was already on my agenda to talk to you about come into this month or January. But I think seeing how we can put some wins together, it's eye-opening to these guys. And, again, it sets the agenda for them. All they got to do is line up appointments.
Yes.
We'll take it from there.
Yes.
So I think that would be cool.
Yeah, and it showed me just the other day somebody needing a fix on the rain slabs, just setting it up into a segue in for me, could be a new customer in other avenues and what I'm already dealing with them, but fixing that progress or problem led me into other avenues. And honestly, just, you know, as a small business, you're wearing a lot of hats, you're running full speed ahead, taking the time to sit back and say, you know, let's focus on this and let's use our resources and our vendors who, all we got to do is set up, you know, but just pump the brakes, take your little breath and set that up and make some more sales, you know?
Yeah, work smart, not hard. And I think the training is a cost, right?
Yeah.
But it's an investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to invest more in our employees to keep them around, that we have the best people and the best service. But yeah. Dude, I appreciate you. You're a rock star.
Thank
You're
you.
awesome.
Too complimentary.
You're a Wolfpack fan. First and foremost, that makes you awesome. We're
makes
gonna,
me hard headed.
Same. And I feel bad that I put my son into that, but I did. And he's a little East Carolina now. But we're going to win the national championship in every sport next year. 26, I feel it.
Yes.
At least cross country. And
apparently, soccer, we're in the Final Four. I just found out this morning at breakfast. I said, how did I not know that? Yeah, the men's soccer's in the Final Four.
That's awesome. So, okay, now I'm going to start watching soccer.
Yeah.
I got to root for something, man.
Yeah.
But no, appreciate you, dude. You're awesome. Yeah, man. Thanks,
All right,
dude.
Well, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy.